welcome back. Boy, that was a first segment that was really fast, wasn't it? And this segment, we're going to continue going through when the third temple is built. And this is something that seems to be closer to happening. Donald Trump has announced through his vice president that they plan on making the move of the embassy, the United States Embassy, to Jerusalem by the end of next year. That's 2019. And so we see things moving along. Whether that will precipitate the rebuilding of the temple, well, behind the scenes, I'm sure there's something going on there, and we just don't know what it is yet. But they want to build some kind of a national synagogue or third temple on the Temple Mount. Check out the God's Holy Mountain Vision website, and I checked it out. They have nothing new up there, so they're not publishing anything new. They're not showing us what's going on behind the scenes or anything. But when it does begin, that's supposed to be the starting point of the futurists, the starting point of their seven-year tribulation, and I call it a seven-year tribulation deception. And that's what my book exposes, When the Third Temple is Built. And I wrote this book for futurists. It's a little more than 100 pages, so it's an easy read and hopefully is enough to pique their interest to get them to read it, perhaps to overthrow it, to challenge me or whatever their purpose for reading it. But hopefully they'll look deeper into the historicist interpretation of prophecy. And last time we got to, we were talking about learning the lines. I believe that's the second chapter. And we were talking about the presumptions that the futurists have about Daniel's 70 weeks prophecy, and specifically verse 27. It's a four verse prophecy, and verse 27 is the final verse of that. And it says, and he, talking about the he. So let's put that on the screen, and we'll try to pick up where we left off. Let's do a little backing up here first. Learning chapter 2, learning the lines, and let's look at the prophecy itself. And here's verse 27. It says, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate even until the consummation. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. And you can see I'm reading from the King James Version here. And the he is very important, and he shall confirm. And in the midst of the week, he shall. See, and we have he three times, so it's very important that we understand who he is. So we're looking for the first person antecedent in the text, and that's what we've been talking about. So they presume that the he is somebody else. That's the futurists presume that the he is somebody else rather than the first person antecedent. They believe it's the second person from the noun phrase, okay? And this violates the scripture immediately, because nowhere else in the entire King James Version Old Testament is he in the text not preceded by a first person antecedent. This is the only place where it would be if you can't accept for some reason the first person antecedent. So they use the second person from a noun phrase. And the second person from the noun phrase is this. And here's the noun phrase, the people of the prince that shall come. That's a noun phrase. And the first person of the noun phrase is the people. The second person is the prince that shall come, because it's about the people, not the prince. The prince, the people of the prince that shall come is a description of the first person of the noun phrase, the people of the prince that shall come, and is a description of the people. So it doesn't really qualify as a first person antecedent, because it's a second person. And next, the people don't qualify because they are not, They are not a he, they are a they. So the only first person antecedent in the text mentioned three times. Also mentioned, he is mentioned three times in verse 27. And the Messiah is mentioned three times in the four verse text of the 70 weeks prophecy. Okay? So let's jump forward to page 24 here. Okay. Also, apparently, you would think the new translators, and we're talking about the new translations where they totally omitted the Messiah and they put an ambiguous in the place of the word Messiah that were given in the King James Version. They put an anointed one. They made it more ambiguous. And in one place, they just used the word one to refer to the Messiah. Instead of he, they made it one to make it even more ambiguous. And watch our last one, part two. Okay. Also, apparently, you would think the new translators could not distinguish who God meant by an anointed one. But in reality, it is easy to discern by the translation differences that follow that they simply did not want to name the Messiah. They purposely desired that the text be more ambiguous as the prince in the phrase, the noun phrase, the people of the prince that shall come, in order to make him a viable candidate to become the counter-reformation, end-time Antichrist character put forth by the Jesuit Ribera. This, to me, is the very fingerprint of the Jesuit order on the New English versions. In the King James Version, it is crystal clear in that the characteristics attributed to the he in its translation are easily discernible as those of the first person antecedent Messiah. One, he shall confirm the covenant, meaning that the covenant must already exist in order to be confirmed. And in compliance with the prophecy of Malachi chapter 3, where the Lord is explicitly called the messenger of the covenant when he comes suddenly to his temple, being a second witness to the Messiah as the proper antecedent. We have several more witnesses in the epistles to confirm our understanding. Now I say that Jesus Christ was a minister of the circumcision for the truth of God, to confirm the promises made unto the fathers. And again, at Galatians chapter 3. And this I say, that the covenant which was confirmed before of God in Christ, the law which was 430 years after, cannot disannul, that it should make the promise of none effect. So we have confirmation several here. Two witnesses should be adequate. Actually, I gave you three to confirm our understanding that Jesus is the he of Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. Two, he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease, which Jesus coincidentally did in the midst of the seven-year period immediately following his arrival at the Jordan River baptism depicted in the Gospels. Jesus caused the sacrifice and oblation to cease 3.5 years after he began his ministry by the sacrifice of himself on the cross. If one does not understand this simple truth, then one does not really understand the gospel at all. Let me read it to you again. He shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease, which Jesus coincidentally did, just coincidence, in the midst of the seven-year period immediately following his arrival at the Jordan River baptism depicted in the Gospels. Jesus caused the sacrifice and oblation to cease 3.5 years after he began his ministry. As a matter of fact, in the midst of the week. And Jesus said something continually during that 3.5 years. If you notice, go through the Gospels, and you notice a peculiar statement by Jesus, which very few explain. I'm going to explain it to you right now. It has something to do with this prophecy of him showing up. He is verifying that he is the fulfillment of this prophecy by this statement, which he makes at least 3 times or more recorded in the Gospel. He says, I have not come but to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. What does that mean? Why did he say that? Because it was the final week that was determined by the 70 weeks prophecy for national Israel as a set apart people and nation to be the church of God embodied in a nation upon the earth. That's what Israel was. Israel's like a picture of what the church is today over the whole earth. But Jesus said it, I have not come but to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Meaning that Israel's time was not up. He was in the 70th week. It began at the Jordan River baptism. Luke records there that he began to be about 30 years old, meaning that he qualified according to the law. He was of age now to minister as a high priest, to fill his position as high priest, which he did. And 3.5 years later, he put an end to the sacrifice and oblation by the sacrifice of himself. This is the very core of the gospel. If you don't understand that, then you don't understand the gospel at all. Next. He shall make it desolate, with the preposition for the overspreading of abominations, describes this desolation announced upon Israel as a sovereign act of judgment by the Messiah, the one who is the King of Kings, the very judge of heaven and earth. As surely as God wielded Babylon as his sword judgment against Judah, when the first temple was desolated, he, the fullness of the Godhead bodily, the resurrected and glorified Messiah, wielded Rome as his sword in judgment against national Israel for the overspreading of abominations when the second temple was desolated in 70 AD. What could be clearer than that? Now we move on to version confusion. When I try to explain these things to many people, they open their Bible and read something that is totally different. And it is no wonder that they are confused, because their new translation says something totally different. As a matter of fact, the differences are so complete that one of the two must be wrong. What do you do when you have two Bibles that say two totally different things? Only one of them can be true. So the differences are so complete that one of the two must be wrong. It is very easy to determine that if one translation has textual and grammatical problems and one does not, that those problems will also extend to the interpretation in that translation as well. And as I said before in the previous section there, that this is the very fingerprint of the Jesuit order on the new translations. This is purposefully done, because this translation isn't written for Catholics, of which the Jesuits are. These translations are written not for Catholics, they have their own Bible, but it's written for Protestants and evangelicals, because this is what Jesuitical means, the very definition to deceive your enemy. And they are in charge of a counter-reformation war on Protestant thought. So what would they write in their Bibles that they have developed for evangelicals and Protestants? Something that would give credence or be effectual in their war on their Protestant thought, their Counter-Reformation war. Okay, so we move on. The New English Standard Version is one of several versions that interprets the text so that it expresses something very different about the characteristics of the he in the same three statements that we just went through. One, he shall make a strong covenant, ESV, meaning that this cannot be about the covenant that already existed with Israel when Jesus would be the messenger when he showed up at the temple. But this interpretation does allow for an unknown end-time Antichrist who will fit the bill of futurist doctrine to qualify to be the unknown he of the text. So no longer the first person antecedent, now an ambiguous one or anointed one. Two, he shall put an end to the sacrifice and offering. While this is practically the same language as the King James Version, it takes on a purely speculative meaning in concert with the aforementioned yet non-existent strong covenant and the bizarre attributes that follow. Well, let's look at the bizarre attributes that follow. Three, on the wing of abominations shall come one who makes desolate. Here the he is replaced with the ambiguous one, once again confusing the identity, but further stating, until the decreed end is poured out upon the desolator. That's why I said bizarre. So that the one desolating and desolated seem to be the same person. Therefore, the he's and the one cannot be the Messiah, regardless of whether the verse makes any sense or not. The prophecy begins in verse 24 with the opening, 70 weeks are decreed about your people and your holy city, but the end of this interpretive translation seems to be the close of a different prophecy and not the decreed end of Daniel's people and holy city. With the King James Version, complete closure is provided for the stated opening proposition within the four verses which comprise the entire 70 weeks prophecy. The changes in the new texts are obviously intended to drive home the point that the now ambiguous one and he cannot be the Messiah. Therefore, he must be the end-time Antichrist, even though it is not stated in the text. But this obscurity is what we are expected to believe and accept. These presumptions play directly into the hands of those who develop this counter-reformation, end-time, anti-Christ scenario because, while they do not believe it, nor hold it as Roman Church doctrine themselves, to the contrary, they decreed the belief of the resurrection and bodily return of Christ to be the millenarian heresy and will be perceived to be correct when the three raptures fail and they are still standing with an apparent truth. Of course, this apparent truth will be bolstered upon the failure of the false prophecy they developed for the very purpose of vindicating the papacy as the very seat of the historical and biblical Antichrist, and also vindicating the Catholic Church from being the great apostasy foretold in the scripture. This purpose has been one of the main objects of the Jesuits' Counter-Reformation war on Protestant thought. Notwithstanding all of this, here we are at a time when the temple seems to be on the verge of being built, and most of the modern Christian and evangelical world will expect to be raptured away when an agreement is established to undertake the task. Will they finally shake this great delusion, or will they fall in line with the Antichrist Church and worship the image of the beast? Yes, a question with a warning. And next time, I think we're going to wait till next time before we jump into chapter 3, the final edit. All right, you're listening to Cross the Border, and we are going through when the third temple is built, and I hope that's been a little bit eye-opening for you. The Rapture Play will begin. You can get a free copy of that by going to my website at crosstheborder.org and clicking on the free ebook tab there. Also, if you go to my website here, I'll show you, I'll put it on the screen here. And bring these tabs down. You'll see this the tabs here. This one's free ebook. Get the book. And if you want to purchase any of these books, right now you got a great deal. 20% off all print products, plus free ground shipping. So, or free mail shipping. That's by postal mail. And usually you get this within 10 days if you order. So make sure you click on that. If you click on the icon there, it'll take you directly to our Cross the Border Protestant Historicist Publishing page there, and you can order any of these books. And make sure that you use that code when you get the promo code when you get to the shopping cart and you're ready to close your purchase. You got to put the code in there, SHIPSAVE20. That'll give you 20% off immediately and free shipping, which is a great bargain for anyone who would like to purchase those. But as I said, all of that is absolutely free if you go to my website and crosstheborder.org, and you click on the free ebook tab right there in the middle. And when you click on that, it'll take you, and you just follow those instructions. It's not just limited to the one book on the left here, but any of the books I have. So if you've already read this one, leave a review and request your next one, whichever it is, History Unveiling Prophecy, When the Third Temple is Built. We're not giving the Hori Apocalyptica away. That's free on a website if you want it. Go to horiapocalyptica.wordpress.com and you can read it free there online. But if you've already read that or any of these, just leave a review and say, hey, I left a review. I'd like to read, and just request whatever you would like. Okay. Our next segment, we are going to do that. We're going to continue in History of Apocalyptic Interpretation, so you're going to want to stick around for that. We're going to hear a witness from history, a witness overlooked. And God was very big on the witness of history. In the Old Testament, he gives us a witness of history from the beginning. And that is from Genesis up through. And he gave us history in advance after the Old Testament was through being written. And then when all of that history was fulfilled up to where the Messiah showed up on the scene, then he gave us the epistles, the gospels, and history in advance in the Revelation. And that's what it's all about. So we're going to read about church history as it was revealed in the Revelation and then as it was revealed in history. So stick around. Don't go anywhere. You're going to want to be educated on that. We'll be back in a few minutes. Choice.